Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone, Smoke Jensen, The Mountain Man, 19, Vengeance of the Mountain Man. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by James Lewis, Tony Penny, Dan Stevens, Tony Nam, Jeff Allen, Christopher Shearing, Tim Carlin, Richard Rowan, Elizabeth Jernigan, Katie Foster, Ren Casey, James Konacek, MJ Casey, Christopher Graybill, Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Johann Detweiler, and Dylan Lynch. Smoke Jensen swung the big double-bladed axe in a high arc, muscles bulging in his arms as the axe split a log neatly in two.
Smoke, you think you ought to leave the heavy cutting to us youngins?
Calvin Woods, going on 16 years old now, had been just 14 2 years ago when Smoke and Sally had taken him in as a hired hand. It was during the spring branding, and Sally was on her way back from Big Rock to the Sugarloaf. The buckboard was piled high with supplies because branding hundreds of calves makes for hungry punchers. As Sally slowed the team to make a bend in the trail, a rail-thin young man stepped from the bushes at the side of the road with a pistol in his hand.
Now, hold it right there, miss.
What can I do for you, young man?
Well, you could throw me some of them beans and cut that fat back over there and maybe a portion of that Arbuckle's coffee, too.
Don't you want my money?
What? No, ma'am. I ain't no thief. I'm just hungry.
And if I don't give you my food, are you going to shoot me with that big Navy Colt?
No, ma'am. I guess not.
Young man, come back here, please.
Look, lady, you don't have to worry. I don't even have any bullets.
Oh, I'm not worried. What's your name, boy?
Calvin, ma'am. Calvin Woods.
Calvin, no one has to go hungry in this country. Not if they're willing to work. If you're willing to put in an honest day's work, I'll see that you get an honest day's pay and all the food you can eat.
Ma'am, I've got to be straight with you. I ain't no experienced cowhand. I come from a hardscrabble farm and we only had us one milk cow and a couple of goats and chickens and lots of dirt that weren't worth nothing for growing things. Ma and Pa and me never had nothing, but we never begged and we never stooped to taking handouts.
Calvin, if you're willing to work and don't mind getting your hands dirty and your muscles sore, I've got some hands that'll have you punching beeves like you were born into it in no time at all.
Even if I don't have no saddle nor a horse to put it on?
Yes, we've got plenty of ponies and saddles. We can probably even round up some boots and spurs that'll fit you.
Ma'am, I don't know who you are, but you just hired the hardest working hand you've ever seen.
Back at the Sugarloaf, Sally sent the young man in to Cookie and told him to eat his fill. When Smoke and the other punchers rode into the cabin yard at the end of the day, she introduced Calvin around. As Cal was shaking hands with the men, Smoke looked over at her and winked. He knew she could never resist a stray dog or cat, and her heart was as large as the Big Lonesome itself.
Son, I hear you drew down on my wife.
Yes, sir, Mr. Jensen, I did.
Just wanted you to know you stared death in the eye, boy. Not many men are still walking upright who ever pulled a gun on Sally. She's a better shot than any man I've ever seen, except me. And sometimes, I wonder about me.
Pearly, get your lazy butt over here.
A tall, lanky cowboy ambled over to Smoke and Cal, munching on a biscuit stuffed with roast beef. His face was tanned a dark brown from hours under the sun, but his eyes were sky blue and twinkled with good-natured humor.
Yes, sir, boss.
Cal, this here chow hound is Pearly. He eats more than any two hands, and he's never been known to do a lick of work he could get out of. but he knows beeves and horses as well as any puncher I have. I want you to follow him around and let him teach you what you need to know.
Yes, sir, Mr. Smoke.
Now let me see that iron you have in your pants.
Cal pulled out the ancient Navy Colt and handed it to Smoke.
This is the piece you pulled on, Sally.
Cal, you're one lucky pup. Hell, if you tried to fire that thing, it'd have blown your hand clean off.
Burley, take Cal over to the tack house and get him fixed up with what he needs, including a gun belt and a Colt that won't fall apart the first time he pulls it. You might also help him pull out a shave tail to ride. I'll expect him to start earning his keep tomorrow.
Yes, sir, Smoke. Now, the first thing you gotta learn, Cal, is how to get on Cookie's good side. A puncher rides on his belly, and it appears to me that you need some fattening up for you can begin to punch cows.
Smoke stopped with his axe in mid-swing and narrowed his eyes at Pearly, who was grinning from ear to ear.
Pearly, I suspect you've been neglecting your teaching chores with young Calvin here.
Well, how's that, Smoke? The boy can ride like an engine, herd beeves like he was born to it, and can damn near shoot as good as me.
Well, appears the boy's a mite short on respect for his elders.
Dropping the axe and moving almost faster than the eye could follow, Smoke took two steps and grabbed Cal by the pants, lifted him, and threw him over his shoulder like a sack of potatoes.
Hey, come on,
Smoke loped down the side of the hill toward a mountain stream, twisting through the valley.
Whew! This boy is right, Pearly. How long since he's had a bath?
No, I'm sorry, Smoke. It's just teasing about you being old and all.
Why, Smoke, I'm almost sure it hadn't been hardly 2 weeks since Cal bathed last. He's not due for at least, another week.
Wrong. Preacher always said a man shouldn't bathe more than twice a year. Otherwise, he'd get sick and die. Of course, that only applies to mountain men, not whelps like Cal here. In the future, I expect him to have a bath at least every week.
Well, even in the winter?
Especially in the winter. Maybe it'll teach him to respect his elders. Right, Cal?
Yes, sir.
Smoke ambled back uphill where he picked up his shirt and slipped it back on.
Now, this old man is tired from all this hard work, so I'm going to take me a little nap under that pine tree over yonder while you young bucks cut up the rest of those logs. It's going to be an early winter. And that means we're going to need lots of wood.
Smoke handed the axe to Cal.
Here, young'un. Maybe chopping those logs will warm you up a bit.
Smoke dipped into his saddlebags and withdrew a handful of donuts, or bear sign, as mountain men called them, and chewed as he lay back against the tree.
Oh, and if you hurry, maybe there'll be a few of these bear signs left when you get done. And then again, maybe there won't be none left at all.
Oh, come on, boy. I've been waiting all morning for a taste of Sally's bear sign. Start swinging that axe like you mean it.
Smoke's gun was in his hand with the hammer drawn back before echoes from the shot had died.
Shh, horse.
Cal and Pearly were nowhere in sight. The faint smell of gunpowder came from upwind. Smoke turned and began to trot through the dense undergrowth of the mountain woods. He peered around a pine tree and saw Cal bending over Pearly, trying to staunch the blood running down his left arm. Four men on horseback were arrayed in front of him, one still holding a smoking pistol in his right hand.
Okay, now I'm gonna ask you boys again. Where's Smoke Jensen spread? We know it's up in these hills somewheres.
You didn't have to shoot him. We're not even armed.
You gonna talk, boy, or do you want the same as your friend there?
Get off that horse, mister, and I'll show you who's a boy.
Say goodbye, Banny Rooster.
Smoke stepped into the clearing. Smoke flipped Cal one of his Colts with his left hand as he drew the other with his right. Cal cocked, aimed, and fired the .44 almost simultaneously with Smoke. The remaining gunman dropped his weapon and held his hands high.
Oh, fuck me! Please don't kill me, please! Please!
Smoke nodded at Cal, indicating he should keep the man covered. Then he walked over to Pearlie.
You okay, cowboy?
Yeah, boss. No problem.
Smoke turned his attention to the man Cal held at bay.
Get off that horse, scum.
Ain't you gonna help Larry? He might be a bleed to death over there.
Well, now we don't have to worry about that, do we? What's your name, skunk breath?
George. George Hampton.
Who are you? What are you doing here looking for me?
Why, we was looking for Smoke Jensen.
I'm Smoke Jensen, you fool. Now you found me. What do you want?
You can't hardly be Smoke Jensen. You're too dang young. Jensen's been out here in the mountains killing people for 9 or 10, 15 years.
I started young, and I'm not used to asking questions more than once.
Look, Mr. Jensen, it was old Larry's idea. Yeah, he said some gun hawk gave him $200 to come up here and kill you. He said he'd share it with Williams if we backed his play.
What was this gun hawk's name?
I don't know. Larry never told us.
You sold your life cheap, mister.
Smoke! No!
Damn kids. That smell coming from you, mister?
Yeah, sir. My bowels kinda let loose when you cocked that big pistol of yours.
Hell, Smoke. You don't want to kill this one. Let him go, and if he's any kind of man, he'll die of shame before the day's over.
Smoke holstered his gun and turned to walk away.
Drop your gun, belt, and rifle and get out of here while the getting's good.
And you can tell your kids you once looked over the barrel of a gun at Smoke Jensen and lived to tell about it. Damn few men can say that.
I bet you think that little scratch on your arm is going to keep you from loading up all that wood Cal cut, don't you?
Pearlie looked back through wide eyes, then grabbed his arm.
Of
course, if you're hurting that bad, I don't guess you want any of those bear sign I've got left.
Pearlie jumped to his feet and started back towards Smoke's horse.
Hey, well, I'll just go and get some Javis started while you and Cal finish loading up. I'll wait for you at camp.
Leave a few for me, you pokehat!
As the wagon neared the cabin, Sally came running out the door, an anxious expression on her face at the sight of Pearlie lying in the wagon, a blood-soaked bandage around his left arm. But her face softened as she reached into the wagon and brushed the bear sign crumbs off his face.
Well, I can see your wound hasn't hurt your appetite any. Are you okay, Pearlie?
Yes, ma'am. It's just a scratch. I'll be back at work in no time.
Pearlie's lucky, Sally. That bushwhacker was using one of those new .44-40 pistols. Otherwise, that slug would have taken his arm clean off.
What's a .44-40, Smoke?
It's a .40-caliber barrel that works on a .44-caliber frame. Gives less of a kick and is more accurate for amateurs, but has lots less stopping power. Cal, would you ride down to the herd and send one of the boys to Big Rock to see if Doc Spaulding can come up here? Take a look at Pearlie's arm.
Oh, boss, you don't have to do that. I'll heal just fine without any old doctor messing with it.
He's just afraid the doc will give him some stitches, Smoke. I'll get someone to go fetch him right now.
It'll heal a lot faster if Doc Spaulding closes that wound.
Well, I'm not in any real hurry, Miss Sally, and I'm not real partial to needles.
Well, I've got some fresh hot apple pie cooling in the kitchen. If you're not in too much pain, perhaps you can have a piece while we're waiting for the doctor to get here.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, no, ma'am. You know what I mean.
That night, after Doc Spaulding had tended to Pearlie's arm and been treated to Sally's home cooking and an after-dinner whiskey and cigar for his trouble, Smoke and Sally strolled through the moonlight, arm in arm.
Smoke, who do you think that man meant when he said a gun hawk had paid them to kill you?
I don't know. I've been in this country for a lot of years and made a lot of enemies. It could be any one of a dozen or more, I suppose.
You ride with your guns loose, Smoke Jensen. Sugarloaf wouldn't be the same without you.
You mean you'd miss me?
Sally took Smoke by the sleeve and pulled him toward their cabin.
Follow me and I'll show you.
The next morning, Smoke was on his way to Big Rock to speak with Monty Carson. He was halfway there when Horace began to act up.
Thanks, old friend. I hear you.
Smoke slipped the hammer thongs from his Colt and put his hand on the butt of the Henry rifle in the scabbard next to his saddle and shook it a little to make sure it was loose and ready to be pulled. Even with his precautions, he was surprised when a man jumped out of the brush into the middle of the trail in front of him. It was George Hampton, and he was pointing a Colt Navy pistol at Smoke.
Get down off that horse, you bastard!
Hampton, I thought you'd be halfway home by now.
I ain't gonna go home till I put a bullet between the eyes of the famous Smoke Jensen.
Hampton, I really don't want to kill you. Why don't you just put that gun down and head on home? And just where is home anyway? You never got around to telling me yesterday.
Just keep your distance, Jensen. I'll admit I ain't no expert with a six gun like you are, but I can't hardly miss at this distance.
Okay, okay, don't get nervous. I'll stay back. But it seems to me a man ought to know just why he's being killed.
Well, you're right. I can see the justice in that. Except I don't rightly know it. Larry, the man you killed yesterday, he made me and the other boys the offer down on the Rio Bravo in Texas. Seems that Gunhawk met him in a saloon in Laredo and told him he wanted you dead in the worst way. Something about how you had humiliated him a while back and he wanted you in the ground because of it.
So you and the other boys decided to pick up some easy money on the Owlhoot Trail, huh?
No, it wasn't like that. We're just cowboys, not gun slicks. There's an outbreak of Mexican fever in the cattle down Texas way, and there ain't much work for wranglers. Leastways, not unless you're hooked up with one of the bigger spreads. Hell, it was this or learning to eat dirt.
I tell you what, Hampton. There's always work for an honest cowboy in the high country. If you're willing to give an honest day's labor, you'll get an honest day's pay.
Well, you're just saying that because I got the drop on you.
Smoke smiled, then quick as a rattlesnake strike, he reached out and grabbed Hampton's gun while drawing his own Colt 44 and sticking the barrel under Hampton's nose.
No, George, you're wrong. You never had the drop on me. That there is a Colt Navy model, a single-action revolver. You have to cock the hammer for it'll shoot, and I can draw and fire twice before you can cock that pistol.
Okay, Jensen, it's your play.
I told you, George, you got two choices. You can get on that pony there and head on back to Texas, or I can give you a note and send you up to one of the spreads hereabouts and you can start working and feeling like a man again. It's all up to you.
That's no choice, Mr. Jensen. You give me that note and I promise I'll not make you sorry you trusted me.
Smoke took a scrap of paper and pencil stub out of his saddlebags. After a moment, he handed the paper to Hampton.
Take this note to the next place you see up to the north of mine. It belongs to the Norths. They can always use an extra hand, and Johnny pays fair wages.
I don't know how to thank you, Mr. Jensen, but thanks.
Later that same morning, Smoke met his friend, Sheriff Monty Carson, on the boardwalk outside the sheriff's office.
Heard anything interesting lately, Monty?
No. Why? Something going on I ought to know about?
Well, something strange happened the other day up on the Sugarloaf. Four men came gunning for me and shot up Pearlie a little bit.
Huh? Well, men gunning for Smoke Jensen. Now, there's a novel thought. Did you bother to bury him, or do I have to send someone from town to go and cart the carcasses back down here to Boot Hill?
Now, there's no need to be sarcastic, Monty. These men were different from the usual type that are just after making a name for themselves. Cal and I let the hammer down on three of them, but I let one of the men live. He set a gun hawk down Texas way on the Rio Grande, hired them to kill me to pay me back for something I did to him a while back.
Oh, well then, that narrows the field of men who want to kill you down from 1,000 to maybe only 100 or so.
Yeah, those were my thoughts too. Well, I guess I'll amble over to the saloon and see if there's been any newcomers to town that might have heard something.
You want some company?
Nah, you know me. I'm a peaceable rancher. Not looking for any trouble. Just gonna have a sociable drink at the neighborhood dog hole.
Yeah, and I'm my Aunt Bertha. Smoke, you know if things get out of hand, you've always got help right here. I may be old and half civilized, but I haven't forgotten how to use this pea shooter if the need ever arises.
Thanks, Monty. But you know out here, a man saddles his own horse and kills his own snakes.
G Just then, a small boy of about 7 years old ran up to Smoke and Carson.
Sheriff Carson, there's a feller down at the saloon who's plumb alkalied. He's dressed up like a sore toe and telling everyone he's gonna kill Smoke Jensen.
Ah, shit. Thanks, Jerome. You run along home now and get off the street. Get your friends off the street, too. I don't guess you'd ride on out of town and let me handle this, would you?
Monty, that sounds like one of those snakes we were just talking about.
Well, if you've only got 5 beans in the wheel, you better load up 6 and 6. No telling if he's got friends to back his play or if he's alone.
You got my back, Monty?
Don't I always?
Smoke pushed through the bat wings of the saloon and immediately stepped to the side, giving his eyes a moment to adjust to the dusky light of the place. Through the cigar smoke and beer smell, he could see a young tough leaning on the bar, waving his hands in a drunken hyperbole.
Yeah, that's right. I'm gonna kill me a Smoke Jensen, that's for sure. As soon as that yell son of a buck gets here, he's a dead man.
Carson grinned and sat down at a table while Smoke walked to the bar and stood next to the man doing all the talking.
Hi there, Pilgrim. Can I buy you a drink?
Sure. And someday you can tell your kids you bought a drink from the man that killed Smoke Jensen.
You mean you're gonna go up against the famous shooter, Smoke Jensen?
Yep. Gonna kill him, too.
Well, let me shake your hand, partner.
After they shook hands, Smoke opened his shirt and showed the man an old bullet wound scar.
See this here scar? That's where Smoke Jensen shot me through the arm.
You mean you faced Jensen in a gunfight and he didn't kill you?
Was no need. Hell, I didn't even clear leather before he shot me and my partner both.
You mean there was 2 of you and you got you both?
Yep. That bastard gut shot my partner and winged me without even breaking a sweat. Left us both on the trail to die. Took my partner 3 days to die. And he died hard, let me tell you.
You gunfighter?
Nah, I'm just a rancher and a cowhand. I'm much too slow on the draw to be a gunfighter. Hell, half the men in town can outdraw me. Here, I'll show you.
Smoke stepped away from the man, and in the blink of an eye, his Colt was drawn, cocked, and pointing at the man's face.
See? I couldn't touch Smoke Jensen. The only reason we tried was his back was turned, and we thought we had the drop on him.
You mean his back was to you, and he still beat you to the draw?
Sure. Jensen said he heard our guns leaving our holsters and knew we had to draw.
Jesus. That's mighty fast.
Yeah, my partner and I thought so, too. But I've been practicing since then. I think maybe I can surprise him if I use my left hand.
No sooner had Smoke finished his sentence than his left-hand gun appeared in the man's face as well. The draw so quick it was just a blur.
Of course, since you're obviously a gunman, you're probably not too impressed with my draw. Say, do you think maybe you could show me how fast a real gunslinger is? Or maybe even give me some pointers?
No, I think you better leave gunfighting to us experts. Well, it don't look like Smoke Jensen is gonna come to town today, so I guess I'll just mosey on down the road a ways.
Hey, I could get one of the guys here in town to ride out to his ranch and bring him in if you want.
No, not today. I think I'll just let him live another day and come back some other time.
Carson walked to the bar and slapped Smoke on the back.
Smoke, it's a shame old Erastus Beetle wasn't here to see that show you put on. He'd have you in one of his dime novels going up against Deadwood Dick, sure as shooting.
Yeah, and maybe I'd win the fair hand of Hurricane Nell if and she didn't shoot me first.
Yeah, that was some show, Jensen. You sure impressed that tin horn. Too bad he didn't have the sand to go against you anyway, since I think you're all blow and no do.
Smoke turned and faced the man in the corner. He narrowed his eyes as he recognized Joe Bob Dunkirk, a man who had made his name in the Lincoln County Wars a few years back. He hired his gun to the highest bidder and wasn't above back shooting to earn his money.
Well, Monty, look who's here. Old Joe Bob himself. Guess I'm lucky you were sitting there next to the door. I'd probably have been backshot like the others he's killed.
Shut up, you bastard! I don't need to backshoot you. I can kill you face to face.
That's not the way I hear it, Joe Bob. I hear unless a man's blind in one eye and can't see out the other, you tend to wait until he's facing the other way before you gun him down.
Dunkirk's hand quivered as he held it out from his side, while Smoke continued to sip his beer. Carson held out his left hand, and the bartender placed a greener sawed-off double-barreled 12-gauge shotgun in it. Carson pulled both hammers back.
Okay, Joe Bob, you want to commit suicide? It's okay with me. But you're gonna do it outside so the bartender don't have to spend all day cleaning your guts off the floor.
What do you mean, commit suicide? I'm gonna kill Mr. Smoke Jensen here.
Like I said, Joe Bob, it's your funeral.
Monty waved the barrel of the shotgun, and both Joe Bob and Smoke walked out into the street.
Speaking of funerals, Joe Bob, what do you want carved on your cross after Smoke curls you up? Other than, here lies a man who died of a case of the slow.
Shut up, Carson, and you'll be next.
Say, Joe Bob, before I send you to meet Jesus, tell me how much he paid you.
Huh? What'd you say?
I just wanted to know what you thought your life was worth. I know you don't never do nothing without being paid for it, so how much did you get paid to die today?
$100 in advance, and another $500 after you're in the ground.
Want to tell me who it was who bought you so cheap?
Nah, let's just get it on.
Okay, back shooter. Fill your hand.
Smoke walked over and squatted next to the dying man, casting his shadow over the man's face to shield it from the sun.
Tell me, Joe Bob, did that gun hawk pay you enough for this?
Jets!
Yeah.
You know he's coming for you.
Yeah, Joe Bob, I know.
But Smoke was talking to a man staring the long stare into nothing.
Monty, give whatever money he's got left of the 100 to the preacher's wife for her fund for widows and orphans. She can always use a donation.
Sure, Smoke. And I'll keep my eyes open for any more trash like this that blows into town. What are you gonna do?
Guess I'll go back up to the Sugarloaf and wait. Not much else I can do.
As Smoke stepped in his saddle, a man came running up to him waving a piece of paper in the air. Smoke took it and saw that it was for his wife.
Sure hope it's not bad news.
You ever know anybody to telegraph good news?
The Silver Spur Saloon in Laredo, Texas was over half full, even though it was only 10 o'clock in the morning. Since the outbreak of Mexican fever in local cattle herds 2 months before, a great many area cowhands had been out of work. Those who hadn't left town were spending what little money they had getting and staying drunk. The border punchers, rowdy and wild to begin with, were now surly, quarrelsome, and downright mean. Fights were a daily occurrence in town, and the doctor was kept busy sewing up knife wounds and trying to plug bullet holes as best he could. In one dim corner of the Silver Spur, a poker game was in progress that had been going on for 3 days straight. One man, sitting with his back to the wall, had a bandana over his head, draping down to cover his ears and tied in the back over which he wore his hat. If any of the other players thought that this was strange attire for a cowhand, they took one look at his eyes and didn't mention it. The man was lean to the point of emaciation, with a scraggly mustache, yellow and tobacco-stained teeth, and haunted eyes that continually swept the room as if for danger. Every time the bat wings would swing open, his hand would slip under the table to wrap around the handle of a belly gun he kept in his waistband. As Morgan leaned back and put a cigar in his mouth, the bat wing swung open and a dust-covered cowboy ambled in. He stood just inside the door, letting his eyes adjust to the light, sleeving sweat off his forehead with his arm. The stranger took off his hat and dusted some of the dirt off his clothes with it and set it back on his head. He slipped the hammer thong off his pistol, worn low and tied down, then walked over to stand in front of the table in the corner.
How you doing, Sundance?
You must be mistaken, mister. My name's Lester Morgan.
No, I'm not mistaken. I followed you here from Del Rio. You was calling yourself Sundance there. At least you was when you gunned down my kid brother by shooting him in the back.
I never...
Before Morgan could finish, the stranger reached across the table and jerked the hat and bandana off his head, revealing a missing left ear.
Maybe you should change your name to One Ear Kid instead of Sundance.
Sundance? Isn't that the name of the man who shot that old gunfighter?
Luke Nations? Just before Smoke Jensen shot off his ear.
Yeah, it is. Only the bastard shot Nations in the back, too. Seems the only way this snake can make a reputation is to backshoot someone. Well, Mr. One Ear, I ain't gonna turn my back on you, so if you ain't completely yellow clear through, let's get it on.
Morgan smiled just before he fired a short-barreled .44 Smith & Wesson belly gun up through the table.
Bartender, clean this mess up and bring us another table. This one seems to have a hole in it.
While two cowboys were dragging the dead man's body out and the bartender was spreading sawdust on the pool of blood on the floor, the other men in the poker game quietly gathered up their money and began to leave.
Hey, boys, what's the matter? My money not good enough for you?
If we'd known it was you, Sundance, we'd have never sat at the table with you to begin with. The sheriff's due back from the county seat at sundown. I'd make myself scarce for then if I was you.
God damn it. Kicked out of another town.
Morgan scraped his winnings into his hat and left the saloon with as much dignity as he could muster. Not having anywhere else to go, he went to the next saloon he could find, El Caballero Cantina. The clientele here was a mixed bag of Mexican vaqueros, professional and semi-professional outlaws, both Mexican and American, and cowboys so down on their luck they couldn't afford to drink on the American side. Sundance sat alone in a corner, his back to the wall as usual, and began to observe his fellow drinkers. He was formulating a plan to get even with Smoke Jensen, but he needed just the right sort of men. Men who were born with the bark on. Men who were as hard as the sun-baked caliche of the Sonoran Desert. Men who would kill for a dollar and give you change. Evidently, the others he had sent to kill Smoke Jensen had not been up to the task. Time to get some men who were used to earning their keep with their guns. The Mexicans had a word for them. Buscaderos. Tough, pistol-toting gun slicks who lived only to kill. If it was the last thing he ever did, he would make Jensen pay for ruining his life. By midnight, he had made a selection. First, he picked a Mexican who went by the name El Gato, the cat. To a Mexican, the only cat worth mentioning is the puma, or mountain lion. El Gato lived up to his name. He was big for a Mexican, over 6 feet tall. With wide shoulders and massive arms and a belly to match, he looked like he weighed over 300 pounds. He had a drooping mustache and smelled like he didn't believe in bath water. He drank his tequila straight, laughing at the gringos who had to cut it with salt and lime juice. In the last hour alone, he had knocked two men out cold who didn't laugh with him at one of his jokes. His English was tolerable, and he wore two pistols and acted like he knew how to use them. The next man Sundance picked was an American who answered to the name Toothpick. He was thin and wiry, all gristle and muscle without an ounce of fat on his body. He wore a thick hand-tooled belt with a pistol on the left side with the butt forward and a knife scabbard on the right. At first, Sundance thought he got his name either because he was never without a toothpick between his lips, even when he smoked or drank, or on account of his thinness. Then, about an hour before midnight, one of the Mexican peons in the bar spilled his beer on Toothpick's boots. In the blink of an eye, Toothpick pulled a long, narrow-bladed knife out of the scabbard on his belt and sliced the man's mustache off. El Gato complimented him on the blade.
Yeah, it's my Arkansas toothpick. I never go anywhere without it.
As he looked at the knife, his hands unconsciously caressed it as if it were a woman, and his eyes glittered with madness. He was just the sort of man Sundance was looking for. The third man Sundance chose that night was much quieter. He stood at the bar without drawing attention to himself, just watching the other patrons through narrow, suspicious eyes. He was stockily built, more square than long, and he had hugely muscled arms more suited to a blacksmith than a cowboy. Sundance recognized him from a wanted poster he had seen in Laredo. His name was Lightning Jack Warner. He rode at one time with Quantrill's raiders until his savagery and ruthlessness made him unwelcome even among that bloodthirsty crowd. He was called Lightning not because he was fast with a gun, but because he was originally from Alabama and had an inordinate fondness and need for moonshine whiskey, or White Lightning. He was mean as a snake when sober, and even worse when he was drunk. Sundance remembered hearing that he was nearsighted and therefore used a greener 10-gauge shotgun as his weapon of choice. It was never out of his reach, and it could be seen leaning against the bar next to him right now. When the regulator clock on the saloon wall struck midnight, Sundance made his move. He sauntered over to the bar and invited El Gato, Toothpick, and Lightning Jack to have a drink with him at his table.
Give me 5 minutes of your time and you get a free drink. What have you got to lose?
When the men were seated around his table in the rear corner of the saloon, Sundance got a bottle of tequila and a handful of limes from the bartender. While Toothpick sliced the limes with his slender knife, Sundance filled everyone's glass.
Smooth. Bitter, but smooth.
I like this gringo. He knows how to drink the fruit of the cactus. Quick and deep, like a man should take a woman.
Okay, Sundance, or whatever you call yourself. We're here, and we've had our drinks. Now what?
First, let me tell you about me. A few years ago, I was just a kid, dreaming of becoming a famous gunfighter. I bought me some fancy clothes and a couple pearl-handled peacemaker Colts, and went on the prod to make my reputation. I hired out my gun to a rancher named Tilden Franklin, who planned to take over his town. Things were going pretty good until this bastard named Smoke Jensen got a bunch of old broken-down gunslicks to back his play against Franklin.
At the mention of Smoke's name, Toothpick's eyes narrowed, and a half-smile appeared on Lightning Jack's face. El Gato just sat there, staring into his tequila.
During the final shootout, I happened to get the drop on one of Jensen's old friends, a man named Luke Nations.
Luke Nations. I heard that old man was a mean son of a bitch, and about as fast on the draw as anybody.
Well, he weren't fast enough. Anyway, after I dusted him, Smoke Jensen stuck his nose in and drew down on me when I wasn't ready. He wounded me and shot off my ear.
Hey, he shot off your ear, man? Santa Maria! Why you do such a thing?
He said it was to teach me a lesson. He wanted to mark me so that all the other young guns who were on the prod to make a reputation would come after me, hoping to make their name by killing the man who shot Luke Nations.
I see.
Well, it happened just like he said. For the last few years, I haven't been able to take a breath without some gun-happy hombre trying to kill me. I've been on the Owl Hoot Trail riding low and haven't been able to spend more than 2 nights in a row in any town since then.
This is all real interest in Sundance, but what the hell does it have to do with us?
Just this. Since I have to live as an outlaw anyway, I decided to make it pay. I've robbed lots of banks, stages, and pilgrims in the years I've been on the trail. I can't go into town and live it up, so I still have most of the money I've stolen. I plan to use every cent of that money to get even with Smoke Jensen.
Just how much money are we talking about, Sundance?
$20,000 and change.
So just what is your proposal?
I want to put together a gang of men to go into the Colorado Mountains and put Jensen in the ground. I figure it'll take between 30 and 40 men to get the job done.
$20,000 isn't a lot of money to go around among that many hands.
$20,000's just seed money to get us started. With all the cattle around here sick with tick fever, most of the big spreads haven't been buying any beef. They're fat with cash and have let most of their punchers go since there's not a lot of work to be done. I figure with the gang of the right sort of men, we could hit a few spreads here and there and anything else that interested us between Texas and Colorado. By the time we get to Jensen's ranch, we'd probably have $20,000 for every member of our group.
That's a mighty ambitious plan. But that much activity would bring down a lot of heat on us. Every lawman in Texas would be after us.
So what? If we keep on the move, hit and run, they'll never catch up with us. By the time they know where we are, we won't be there anymore.
Just as Sundance finished speaking, the bat wings flew open and a group of 10 men walked in. Their leader was a short Mexican with a huge pot belly. He was unshaven, he had a large black mustache, and he was wearing crossed cartridge belts on his chest and a double holster rig around his ample waist. He had a long purple scar running down his face from his left eyebrow to the corner of his mouth. The men with him were covered with trail dust and looked as tough as horseshoe nails.
Motherfucker!
What's the matter? Who's that?
That's Benito Valdez. The meanest hombre in Mexico. He swore to kill me the next time he saw me.
Don't worry, Elgato. You're with me now.
Sundance reached under the table and loosened his pistol in its holster, leaving his hand wrapped around the butt. Valdez took the drink the bartender poured him and turned, leaning back with his elbows on the bar. After a moment, he saw Elgato.
Hey, amigos. Look who's here. It is Elgato. How you doing, pussycat? You remember what I said I was going to do if I saw you again?
Valdez let his hand drop to his pistol. Before he could do anything, Sundance gave a big yawn. He flipped a handful of change on the floor at Valdez's feet.
Hey, lard butt. How about bringing my friends and me another bottle of tequila? We've about finished this one off.
What means lard butt?
It means your ass is so fat, I bet you have to tie two horses together to ride anywhere. Now, are you gonna bring me my drink, or am I gonna have to kick your fat ass out of here?
Filthy gringo!
Sundance kicked his chair over sideways and rolled once on the floor. Before Valdez's pistol cleared his holster, Sundance opened fire. His men drew and began to fire just as Elgato Toothpick and Lightning Jack opened up on him.
Chingo tu madre!
Sundance fired at the last of Valdez's men still standing. The survivors walked through the fog of heavy smoke and cordite to the pile of bodies next to the bar. Elgato stood over the bodies, smoking pistols still in his hands, greasy hair hanging down and sweat making rivulets in the dirt on his face.
Well, compañeros, we fixed those men's wagons pretty damn bueno, eh?
Well, we better bum the breeze out of here. We did good tonight. We make a pretty good team, compadres. Gather all the men you think are tough enough for what I outlined earlier, and we'll meet at the American side of the Rio tomorrow at noon. There's a grove of cottonwood trees about 10 miles north of Laredo. I'll make camp there and wait for you and your men.
The men shook hands and swaggered out of the saloon to their mounts without looking back. Sunset comes early in the High Lonesome, and the sun was disappearing over the edge of the western peaks when Smoke spurred his mount toward home. Though he wondered what was in the telegram that came for Sally, he didn't look. He figured he would find out soon enough. Smoke could almost taste the crispness and tang of early fall on the night air, and the sky was cloudless and clear, making the stars as brilliant as diamonds scattered on black velvet. Smoke leaned back against the kennel, letting Horse have his rein, as he watched the stars and dreamed dreams of wilderness lands unsullied by people.
Come on, Horse. That's coming from the house.
Just before he came within sight of his cabin, Smoke slipped off Horse and tied him in some brush beside the path. He shucked his Winchester from its saddle boot and eared back the hammer. He ducked and weaved through the forest of high mountain pines and underbrush until he came to a small brook gurgling in the darkness. From this vantage point, he watched as gunfire exploded in several windows of the cabin, to be answered by at least 4 other guns in the woods surrounding it. He could make out 2 bodies lying motionless in the yard by the hitching post in front of the bunkhouse, and another sprawled spread-eagled partway up the ridge to the south of the cabin. So, he thought, at least 2 of ours and 1 of theirs is down. Smoke crouched and began to move through the forest. Within less than 5 minutes, Smoke was standing directly behind a figure kneeling beside a fallen tree. The man was firing a Henry rifle that flashes the gunfire from the cabin windows. The body stood there for a moment, as though uncertain what to do next. Then it crumpled as if boneless. Smoke picked up the head by its hair and trotted towards his next appointment. Jesus Garza, called Borrachon by friends and enemies alike because he was seldom seen completely sober, pulled back from his position on the hillock overlooking the rear of the cabin. Both his pistols were empty, and he needed to reload. He also needed another swallow of the tequila he always kept handy. Squatting with his back to a tree to prevent being hit by a lucky shot, he tilted his bottle up toward the stars and gulped until there was nothing left but air. He belched loudly and returned to his position when suddenly something hit him in the back. Whirling, both pistols cocked and ready to fire, he looked down at his feet. Lying there among the pine cones and needles, staring up at him with unblinking dead eyes, was the head of his compadre, Jorge Bustamante. He turned and ran as fast as his boots would carry him toward the cabin, forgetting in his terror what waited for him there.
Jorge! Are you there, boy?
Jerry Mason was worried. He had just seen Jesus Garza blown almost in two by that big shotgun in the cabin, and now Jorge Bustamante wasn't answering his yells. That meant there was only himself and old pig-eyed Peterson against God only knew how many in the cabin. Seemed like easy money when that gun slick down in Texas offered the four out-of-work cowhands 3 months' wages to come up here and kill some old mountain man, but it sure as hell wasn't working out the way they thought.
Damnation! I think I'll just head on over to Peterson and see if he's ready to skedaddle on out of here.
With that, Mason holstered his pistols and walked to his horse. He untied the reins from the tree branch, put his left foot in the stirrup, and reached for the saddle horn.
What the?
He felt something hairy and sticky under his legs. He pulled the object off his saddle horn and held it up where he could see it. Gulping and swallowing bile, he threw the severed head of his friend Jorge back into the woods. He leaped up on his horse and spurred the animal into a run. Smoke stepped out of the bushes he was hiding in as Mason galloped past, and he swung his Winchester rifle in a horizontal arc. Smoke wiped blood and pieces of teeth off the stock of the Winchester and went after the lone remaining gunman. No stealth this time. He walked directly toward the man, not bothering to mask his noise. Peterson stepped back from the tree he had been firing around and began to reload his Colt Peacemaker 45. He looked up when he heard someone coming through the underbrush toward him from where Mason had been stationed.
Hey! You fat fuck, over here!
Smoke left the man where he fell and retraced his steps to where Mason lay unconscious. He took the rope off his saddle, looped it under the sleeping man's arms and back to the saddle horn, and led his horse down toward the camp.
To the cabin!
Smoke, is that you?
Yeah, Sally, it's me! Hold your fire! I'm coming in with a prisoner!
Sally, Cookie, Pearly, Cal, and the remaining men from the bunkhouse gathered in the cabin yard to meet Smoke. When he walked up, Sally was bending over the two hands lying on the ground. One was dead, and the other was seriously wounded. She straightened and waved over one of the men standing in front of the bunkhouse.
Sam, would you take one of the horses and ride into Big Rock and see if you can get Doc Spaulding out here? Tell him we have one dead and Woodrow has a bullet in the shoulder and one through the chest. Also tell him Smoke has worked a little on one of the attackers in his usual manner, so he may need to do some reconstructions to a face. I know it's no use, but I'd better ask. Smoke, did you happen to leave any up in the woods who might need Dr. Spaulding's attention?
Not unless he's considerably more skilled than I remember. You might send word to the undertaker to get busy cutting some wood, because he's going to have some business shortly.
While Smoke was talking to Sally, Cal and Pearly untied his prisoner and dragged him over to the front porch, propping him up against the hitching post. The men gathered around him with angry, sullen faces. Hank Collier, Woodrow's saddlemate and best friend, eared back the hammer on his pistol and aimed it at Mason's face.
Not just yet, if you don't mind, Hank. I got some questions for this pile of cow crap. Then, You men can take care of business.
Yes, sir, Mr. Smoke. But if Woodrow dies because of this man, don't try to stop what's going to happen next.
Wouldn't think of it, Hank. What's your name, mister?
Mason. Jerry Mason.
Where you from, cowboy?
My friends and I are all from Texas.
That wouldn't be down Laredo way, would it?
No. We work near there on a little shirt tail spread down to Del Rio.
Well, Jerry, I'm kind of wondering why a bunch of sorry-ass, dumb old boys from Texas come all the way up here and decide to shoot up my home in the middle of the night.
Well, I don't know either, mister. I just rode with them others and took orders from the big guy, Peterson. Maybe you could ask him.
I'm afraid Peterson ain't going to be talking again real soon. Not without no tongue, anyway.
Mason's face twisted in terror as Smoke said this. Then Smoke dropped Bustamante's severed head into his lap.
I believe this belonged to one of your other friends, and I don't think he's in the mood to talk either.
Mason just sat there, staring into the glazed, lifeless eyes of his friend.
Tell us what happened. Who hired you all to come up here and attack us?
You let me go with it, I tell you.
I'm afraid not, Jerry. You've killed at least one of our friends, and maybe another if the doc can't fix him up. In this country, murder is a hanging offense. But hanging is preferable to some other ways of dying, if you get what I mean.
Okay. Some man came up to us in a saloon and asked if we was looking for work. We said sure, so he'd give us 3 months' pay to come up here to the high country and put a bullet in Smoke Jensen. Said there was dirt between them.
What was the man's name?
I don't know, and that's the honest truth. Except there's one thing funny about him.
What's that?
He ain't got but one ear. Said his writing had been shot off.
He was a shootist?
I don't know. Wore a fancy double rig, though, and looked like he knew how to use it.
Okay, boy. Thanks for being honest with me.
You gonna hang me now?
I don't know. That's up to the boys here. After all, it was them that you ambushed, and one of them you killed.
Smoke, I think we ought to wait for Sheriff Carson and let him take this boy into town for a trial.
How's Woodrow?
He's pretty bad. He was hit hard, but he's young and strong and fighting back. If he lives until Doc Spaulding gets here, I think he'll make it.
Sally, I'm going to leave it up to the men what to do. If they want to be merciful and let Monty have him, okay. If they want to form a string party and decorate a cottonwood tree with his carcass, that's okay, too.
But
I know it's hard, dear, but this is hard country. And those men made their choice when they came up here to kill people for money.
Sorry, Hoss. Looks like you go to meet Jesus tonight.
Okay. I'm not going to cry about it. Let's do it.
The men put him on a horse and rode into the woods. Pearlie and Cal went into the cabin to sit with Woodrow until the doc came. Pearlie walked out the door onto the porch to find Smoke sitting there, cigar in hand, looking over the Sugarloaf Ranch.
Light and set, Pearlie. Is the doc through in there?
No, sir, but might near. He says Woody's gonna be okay if and he don't get superation.
Pearlie, what did you make of Mason's description of the man who paid them to come up here?
Well, could be most anybody, I reckon. Except something about that one ear business is kind of familiar. What'd you make of it, Smoke?
I only remember one hombre who fits that description, who has cause to hate me enough to pay someone to kill me, and who's coward enough to be too afraid to do it himself.
Who's that?
Lester Morgan.
You mean that dandy who went around acting like some big gun hawk? The one that shot Luke Nations in the back?
You recollect any other man with one ear who's crossed our paths in the last few years?
Nah, I don't. But I heard old Lester Morgan had gone to Mexico trying to outrun his reputation.
So had I, Pearlie. But when you think on it, Texas isn't that far from Mexico, is it?
Just then, Doc Spaulding and Sally walked out onto the porch.
How's Woody, Doc?
I think he's gonna be all right, Smoke. I just asked Sally to let him rest in the cabin tonight and then send him to Big Rock on a buckboard tomorrow. I'll have to probe for the bullet in his chest, and I want him to get a little stronger before I put him through that.
Can we fix you some supper, Cotton? Or would you like coffee or a drink?
No, thanks. One of the town ladies is in labor, and I need to get back down there. Can't have these women learning they can have those babies without me. Wouldn't be good for business.
I'll bring old Woody to town first thing in the morning, Doc.
Okay, thanks, Pearly. Good night.
The doctor tipped his hat, climbed into his buggy, and settled back to grab a quick nap as his horse found its way back to Big Rock. Pearly waved goodnight to Smoke and Sally and sauntered toward the bunkhouse. Smoke put his arm around Sally and she laid her head on his shoulder.
Tired?
Yes. We'd just finished feeding the hand supper when those men opened fire on us. It's been pretty much nonstop since then.
Is Woody taken care of?
Yes, he's sleeping soundly. Dr. Spaulding gave him some laudanum.
Smoke gently steered Sally through the door and toward their bedroom.
You get in bed. I'll get us a glass of wine, and we'll relax a little before trying to go to sleep.
She caressed his cheek with her palm, then walked tiredly toward their room as he turned to look for the wine glasses. When he entered the bedroom, Sally was propped up in bed wearing one of her silk nightshirts. He could see the outline of her breast through the thin material, and he suddenly had to concentrate to keep from spilling their wine. They touched glasses.
To us.
To us, dear.
After taking a sip of the dark red burgundy, Smoke handed her the telegram he had been given in town. She pursed her lips, looked at him once, then drank the rest of her wine in one swallow, as if to fortify herself against whatever news was in the message. Tears formed in her eyes as she read, and Smoke put his hand on her thigh, squeezing lightly to let her know he was there for her.
My father's had a stroke.
Is it bad?
My brother says not, but he has some weakness in his right arm and leg, and the left side of his face droops a little. They ask if I can come and be there with him while he heals.
Smoke nodded without speaking.
I'll send an answer with Pearly in the morning, telling them to give my love to Dad, but that I won't be able to join them.
Why not? I could take you over to the railhead and you'd be there in less than a week.
Why? Because someone is after my man, trying to kill him. I'm damned if I'm going to let anyone hurt you, Smoke. We've worked too long and too hard to build a good life here in the mountains, and nobody is going to take that away from us. Not without a hell of a fight, they're not.
Smoke took Sally in his arms and hugged her tight, loving her more at that moment than he ever had.
You're right, darling. Someone is trying to kill me, or have me killed. I think it's that young gunfighter, Lester Sundance Morgan, that I treed and marked a few years ago.
All the more reason for me to stay where I belong, right here by your side.
No, dear. I think it'd be better if you were somewhere else for a while.
Sally opened her mouth to speak, an angry expression on her face. Smoke put a finger to her lips.
Hang on and listen to me for a minute. With you here, I'm not free to move around and do what I need to do to prepare for when this skunk gets tired of sending second raiders up here to be killed. Sooner or later, he's going to come and try to do the job himself. And since I know he's a devout coward, he won't be coming alone.
But Smoke, sweetheart, I want to help you when that time comes.
No, sweetheart. I don't want a war here in our valley. Too many of our friends might get hurt. I plan to set up some hands as guards to keep any sizable forces away from our home here. And I'm going to go to the High Lonesome, where they'll have to come and get me on my terms. And in my country.
Okay, Smoke Jensen. I'll go, and I'll take care of my dad, and leave you here to take care of whoever is behind tonight's attack. But you hear me, and hear me well. You ride with your guns loose and your temper short, and you stay off that ridge line, because if you let anybody kill you, I'll never forgive you.
You hear me, Sally Jensen. You get your father well in a hurry. Because every minute without you is like a month to me.
Sally smiled a familiar smile. She pulled the nightshirt over her head and sat there, looking at Smoke with heavy eyelids and chest heaving.
How come you're not undressed yet? Don't you know it's time for bed?
Oh, yes, ma'am, I do. Do you want some more wine?
No, just you.